Blog Talk Radio.
Money Matt Cannata, and I'm joined by Simon, the soccer dad, Houtstradamus, Papa Houts, Houts the candy man, Houts the creeper with the white man handing out candy, and every other thing you could possibly think of for this dude, because, I don't know, just felt like ragging on you, Houts, to start the show today. We're back, and we're better than ever. Last week, we were hijacked a bit by the none other than Kevin Noble, the owner of thefinsider.com. And when the owner calls in, and there ain't nothing you can do about that, boys, right? It's like Stephen Ross calling Adam Gase in the office, and Stephen Ross telling Adam Gase, listen, I want you to go in this direction. Adam Gase can't say much about it if he wants to keep his job, right? What was that?
I said, like Taco Charlton when they were about to draft him, if Harris wasn't there. I think that was Stephen Ross, right?
And who knows what Stephen Ross said in the draft room. What was interesting, though, was this. And we didn't touch on this last week, and I totally forgot about it. But Adam Gase was not in the war room. I had mentioned this on Twitter, and some people started freaking out at me. Like, who cares if he's not in the war room, right? But I'm pretty sure every head coach in the NFL is – room for at least the first round, maybe not round 6 and 7, but definitely for the first round. But Tannenbaum and Greer kind of confirmed that in their press conference afterwards by saying that Gase was texting them, you know, and as the pick got closer, he entered the draft room. And at first I was a little peeved because I'm like, well, why isn't the head coach in the draft room? But I'm thinking about it, you know, I thought about it a little more, and I actually think it's kind of a brilliant idea, right? You don't see, obviously, Tannenbaum and Greer on the sideline with an earshot of Gase, right? Gase, obviously, is a football coach first. I don't think he put time into watching film of players coming out of college, or, I mean, the ones that the Dolphins are targeting, yes, absolutely. But in terms of watching the whole gauntlet of players, obviously, he's not going to do something like that. So the more I'm thinking about this, I'm like, this is actually genius. You know, he's staying out of the room. Let them do their thing. As the pick gets closer, obviously go into the room. But all the other coaches are in a different room. Hell, even the regional scouts are in a different room than the war room, for those who don't know that. Very few teams allow their regional scouts to be in the actual war room with them during the draft. They're off to a separate room. The coaches are off to a separate room except the head coach. But this year, Adam Gase apparently joined his other coaches. And I think that's the right thing to do. What do you guys have to say about that, House? We'll start with you.
Yeah, man, that's some good knowledge, man. I've never been in a war room. I never will be, so it's good to hear those things. I mean, for me, I think it's awesome. I mean, I don't see any reason why it needs to be in there. I mean, I was at the draft, and me personally, the anxiety I felt, I cannot imagine what a team getting ready to draft that player, they are really into is going to fall to them. I mean, I was pacing back and forth just waiting to see who the Dolphins pick, so you can only imagine how Adam Gase felt. I mean, I have no issue with him, you know, like you said, stepping outside the room and then coming in closer to when the pick is. And, I mean, these guys, they know who they're targeting. I think Adam Gase kind of had a feeling who the players were, and there really wasn't much reason for him to be in that room other than when the Dolphins were on the clock. So, I mean, I have no issue with it at all. I completely understand where Adam Gase is coming from, because me personally, as a fan, the anxiety was sky high, so – no issue at all with this.
And before you jump in here, you know, I was a Little League coach for about 10 years, and I ran a Little League here in my local hometown for about 10 years. And this is going to sound weird, but anyone who's ever coached Little League or anything else where you have a draft, I mean, the anxiety for that is pretty big, because you obviously want the players who you want to make your team the best that it could possibly be. But maybe to relate it to everyone listening a little better, I mean, even if your fantasy drafts, right? Your fantasy drafts, yeah. You pay a lot of money to enter a league, even if you pay a dollar league. You're sitting there and you're wondering who you're going to get. You're getting anxiety as your pick gets closer and closer, and the guy you want is falling and falling. and that anxiety just builds. And the stakes are higher as you pay more. And then in the NFL, when your job depends on it, only imagine when you set your targets on the board and then things start happening. And I don't think I'd be able to handle that kind of anxiety, which is why I'm sitting behind a computer right now talking to it and doing a podcast for the insider.com. Pressure here, right, boys?
That's right.
But Sutton, your thoughts on Adam Gase not being in the war room with the rest of the Dolphins?
I mean, I think with technology these days, I don't think it's a huge deal. You could FaceTime in real time about, you know, if there's any kind of tricky situation that you didn't think out with all your decision models earlier in the draft. So I don't think his literal physical presence is necessary in the war room. I do think his mind is necessary for what transpires throughout the draft. But I think another interesting layer to all this, and we've talked about this a little bit leading up to this, is the increased power that Gase is supposed to have over the personnel. And it's interesting that he took this approach, which I think is kind of an Adam Gase move, to put the spotlight on Chris Greer and put the spotlight on Tannenbaum. You know, they are, you know, Adam Gase is obviously intimately involved in all the decisions that happen with the personnel there. But the fact that he takes that back seat, he doesn't even go into the war room. He trusts. That's the key word there. He trusts the other people to make the right decisions. I think that's something powerful, and that's something that Gase has shown the ability to do, is not only motivate players, but it seems like he's kind of trending towards motivating his peers and his predecessors even. So I like the move. Absolutely.
So I'm going to play devil's advocate here, and I don't want to start any rumors because there are no rumors to start. I mean, Tannenbaum, Greer, and Gase get along perfectly fine. They get along very well. That wasn't always the case when they started off 0-4, right? I can tell you right now that wasn't the case. Tannenbaum and Gase weren't exactly, you know, best friends at that point. But then Gase started taking and did what he wanted to do. But I'm going to play devil's advocate here. And again, I'm not starting any rumors. So those in the live thread right now, those listening on Twitter and those listening to the replay of this, don't come finding me on the internet and yelling at me for saying this. But is this possibly self-preservation in terms of a job in 2 to 3 years? Let's say the rails fall off in year three, right? Or year four, right? And Adam Gase distancing himself from the draft room, from the war room, and from the draft, he can easily go to Stephen Ross and say, listen, these aren't the players I picked. I'm doing one hell of a job coaching up these players, but these aren't my guys. You know, these are the guys that Greer and Tannenbaum picked, and maybe I would have picked someone differently, but maybe I wouldn't have. But I think that's a way for Gase to maybe say, it's not all on me. I didn't shop for the groceries in the draft. Yeah, I have control over the 53-man roster, but I didn't pick these guys coming into the NFL. Thoughts on that?
Yeah,
Sutton?
That's possible. Yeah, but I just think that if something like that happened, I don't think we'd ever actually know about it. You know, it would always be handled behind closed doors. So even if that question was, you know, however valid it is, we would never have the real information we needed to confirm that or not. So I guess that's a different way of saying it's kind of a pointless thing to pursue.
I mean, none of us know Adam Gase personally, but from what we've seen, I mean, he's not that type of person, in my opinion. I think the players that they're trying to bring in, these are all guys that love football, good characters. And I mean, they're just players that want to come in here and they just want to work and continue to get better. They seem to be Adam Gase guys. So, I mean, I see what you're saying 100%. I mean, if the shit does hit the fan, I mean, Adam Gase could use this as a way of saying, save me and fire the other guys. But that to me just doesn't seem to be Adam Gase. And just to touch on one thing, I mean, you brought up how Adam Gase not being that war room similar to us in fantasy drafts. I mean, I think that's as close to the real deal as you can get. And I think that's pretty much, I mean, we sit there, like you said, you got all this money on the line, you're waiting for this player to fall to you. I mean, Adam Gase, that times 100 is how he was feeling, so I can understand exactly why he wasn't in the boardroom at the time.
Yeah, and again, not starting any rumors, guys, or anyone listening, just playing devil's advocate here. I don't think that's what Adam Gase said to himself, well, I'm going to stay out of the draft room so I can blame them in 2 to 3 years. That's absolutely not true. But maybe just a consequence of it down the road, a trickle-down effect that he can look back and say, well,
I mean, it is definitely something to think about in the same way Christian McCaffrey sitting out of bowl games. I mean, that adds a whole new layer of things to question as prospects enter the draft and, you know, and as teams approach the draft, there's going to be little nuances like that evolve. So I think it was a great question to consider, MC Money.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, thank you, MC Money. I mean, for me, I think if the shit hits the fan, throw Tannenbaum, throw Greer, throw him to the side, man. Adam Gase is our guy, so that's how I feel anyway.
Absolutely. All right, let's talk draft. Last week we were talking about rounds 1 through 3, right? We talked about Charles Harris. We gave a little scouting report on him. We talked about Raekwon McMillan. I told everyone how at the beginning of round 2, I got a text from somebody and said they have their guy, and I wasn't told the name, but I was told that they have a specific target in mind in round 2. And when Raekwon was selected, I got that text, and I said that was their guy. And so they targeted Raekwon the entire time in round 2, and they got who they wanted to get. Round 3, help me out here. Oh, that's right.
Tankersley.
I had a brain fart there. They drafted a cornerback who, Byron Maxwell has injuries. Xavien Howard has injuries. Tony Lippa has injuries. It's going to be a very interesting competition and see how Tankersley shapes out there. Well, let's dive into rounds 5, 6, and 7. If you remember, the Dolphins did not have a fourth round pick. So round 5, number 164, we saw a run on offensive linemen taking place right before the Dolphins moved up 2 spots to give up some late round picks this year. With that pick, when they moved up from 166 to 164, they drafted Isaac Asiata from Utah. And leading up to the draft, Barry Jackson, the Miami Herald, and others had Isaac Asiata as a prime target from the Miami Dolphins in terms of someone they were targeting, and they got their guy again. We don't know who else was above him, but this was a specific target of theirs and someone that they liked and coveted, and they got who they wanted to get. They could have went guard in any of the first 3 rounds, right? Because with the way the draft worked out in round 1, I'm just looking at my board here. The first offensive lineman taken was, 20th overall by the Broncos, Garrett Bowles. He was an offensive tackle. After that, the next offensive lineman taken was Ryan Ramczyk at 32 overall by the Saints, another offensive tackle. Then Cam Robinson by the Jaguars, another offensive tackle, round 2, pick 2. And then Forrest Lamp, finally, round 2, overall pick number 38. So the Dolphins had a chance to draft Forrest Lamp, who they were targeted and linked to leading up to the NFL draft. They passed on him for Charles Harris, and I think everyone would agree that Charles Harris, I think, at least on paper, is the better pick right now. But again, after that, so then Miami picked number 54 overall. There wasn't a single offensive lineman picked between Forrest Lamp and the Dolphins picking. They could have drafted Ethan Postick. The Seattle Seahawks drafted him 4 spots later after Miami. They could have drafted Deion Dawkins, who the Bills selected about 10 spots later. And then after that, Taylor Mottin went offensive tackle. Then Dan Feeney, offensive guard, went. And Patrick Elflein went offensive guard as well in the third round, picks number 70 and 71, respectively. So, again, they had their chances to draft those guys, and they passed up, again, for Raekwon McMillan in the second round. Then they drafted Cordrea Tankersley in the third round. After Elflein went, there was no other offensive guard drafted. Offensive tackle Antonio Garcia went to the Patriots, round 3, pick number 85 overall. The Dolphins pick 3, number 97 overall. After that, we didn't see an offensive guard go until Dorian Johnson went to the Arizona Cardinals, round 4, pick number 115. So again, the Dolphins could have easily traded down. I'm sure they had trade offers on the table for that. They did not bite. So it looks like to me that the Dolphins really did get someone who they like very highly. Okay. So this is a very safe pick for the Dolphins, in my opinion. He's wearing number 68. It's funny because when I was watching film of him in house, he reminded me of Richie Incognito, just the toughness that he has. And, of course, he's going to get Incognito's former number when he was on the team. So Asiata is a guard slash center, which is good because when Mike Pouncey does go down, and you notice I do say does go down because he will go down. I will bet lots of money on it, just not with anyone listening to me. His versatility should enable him to make the 53-man roster without much issue. He should be a starter day one. Sutton, your thoughts on Isaac Asiata, the man who balled in tears when he was drafted by the Dolphins.
Yeah, what a great scene to see him so moved by us moving up to select him. Seems like a great young man. The plays you see on film, some of those, the plays that jump out, I mean, my goodness. And his quote kind of encapsulated it perfectly. Something along the lines of intelligence and brutality. I mean, you just see him seeking people out to just destroy. What's interesting about this pick, though, and you said it earlier, MC Money, his name has been connected with us, and it's I like the name because that's the name of my first child. But anyway, it's an interesting fit because it seems like he fits more with that power, the power blocking scheme, and not so much the zone blocking scheme. And we seem to be more of a zone read type team last year with the run play calls that we had. So it's interesting to see how he's going to kind of adapt to what might be some new terminology, obviously, but also some new techniques that he's going to have to learn. So it's going to be interesting how quickly he learns that stuff. And I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that he wins this competition. I really do think it's going to be a competition. I think Bushrod's going to be the right guard. I think he's pretty safe there. And I think you're going to have a left guard competition between Asiata and Steen and Urbick. And you're just going to see how it all plays out after that. So I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that Isaac Asiata is the starting left guard for the Dolphins. Although it would be great for that to happen.
Yeah, I mean, first thing I want to say is happy birthday, Anthony Steen. I just saw it pop up on Twitter a little bit ago. Apparently it's his birthday, so happy birthday to him. For me, I do agree with Sutton. I do think it's going to be a battle. I do think these guys are going to let the best man win. But, I mean, I'm not guard expert or a guru like you guys might quick try to say I am because I'm definitely not. I know Sutton's feelings on Bushrod. He likes the gaping holes that he opens up, and I think Bushrod does a great job.
Oh, he's so massive.
Yeah, those massive holes that he opens up. But for me, I mean, Isaac Asiata, he's got that grit to him. I mean, you see him pancaking dudes, just pushing him into oblivion. I mean, I would have liked to see him wear number 69. Maybe that's just me, but I mean, you get to see him wear Incognito's old number. He does definitely remind you of him with the, I mean, oh man, the face paint. I really want to see him wear the face paint at the next level. For me, I think Isaac Asiata, I think he's going to be the Dolphins left guard, but I definitely think it's going to be a battle. But he's been a guy that the Dolphins seem to be going after throughout the entire draft process. So to see him fall there to the fifth round, I mean, I do those fan speak mock drafts, and for what it's worth, that guy was going in the third or fourth round. I mean, I know that's just some bullshit computer program, but I mean, he was a good get it with the fifth in the fifth round. I think he's definitely a starter in the league. So I'm anxious to see what he does, and I think it's going to be a battle to see who gets that left guard spot.
And yeah, interesting, you said something about the eye black there, Houts, because he said something in the media about, like, I'm not going to do that yet. I don't think I've earned that right.
Yeah,
so it already seems
that's
like he has a – yeah, he already has a humility about himself. So if it doesn't pan out, it's not because he didn't work hard enough or he didn't have his mind focused on things. I mean, that's the least of my concerns with this guy.
Right. So I am looking at his exact quote right now about that, and this is what he said. Verbatim, this is his actual quote. The question was, are you going to keep the face painting up? He says this, probably. I feel like now I'm a rookie. Those are the kind of things you have to earn. I can't just show up and expect everything to just come to me. Those are things you have to earn. They put me in 68. I plan on earning that jersey number. Just because they give me something doesn't mean I'm going to take it. Now, earning it. And this is what he said about the face paint. Quote, I've been doing that since Little League. That's like the, I don't know. It started out just kind of my deal. I loved it. That's kind of my trademark thing. There's no real reason behind it. I just did a line across my face because my high school mascot was a Don. It's kind of like a Zorro, and he wears that mask. That was really the only inspiration behind that. And then I kind of just did more traditional war paint and some other stuff around my eyes. But the fans like it, and I like it. It's kind of my identity thing. So I think he was saying the right things in the meeting at the time, but I do think come week one, we will see that face paint on his face. Maybe not in preseason per se, but I think once we see week one hit in the regular season, we will see that face paint. And I think he's going to become a fan favorite very quickly.
I hope so.
Yeah, and this other thing was interesting about what he said about Adam Gase. They asked what was Isaac's first impression of head coach Adam Gase, and this is what Asiata said. He's awesome. He's not your traditional head coach. A traditional head coach is kind of a stern, hard dude, and I'm not saying that's not Coach Gase, but he's a guy. You can relate to him. He's very open. He's a very approachable guy. It's kind of intimidating for players, and I feel like players know that when you walk past the head coach or somebody in the hallway, it's kind of intimidating. You don't want to do that one thing wrong. You don't want him to think a certain way about you. But I just passed him on my way in here. And he just, like I said, he's an approachable guy. I love him as a head coach. I'm excited to be working for him. And that was one of the reasons why Adam Gase got here, right? Because he can relate to the players. He's approachable. The players love playing for him. And he draws the respect from everyone that he's around. So we're going to see how this shakes out. Clyde Christensen said that the confidence level, they're very high. And Tunsil, he can excel at tackle. And it's basically, you know, Bushrod's going to compete. Larson's going to compete. And Asiata's going to compete. And basically, that's going to be it, which is what we thought all along when we did the podcast, when we did our show. Leading up to the draft months ago, we said it's going to be Bushrod, it's going to be Larson, it's going to be a rookie guard competing for those two starting spots. So we will see how that shakes out, but I don't think Asiata will be on the bench long. If he does not have started to begin the season, he will be a starter by the end of the season for sure. But I do think he makes that starting lineup week one. All right, let's move on. 14 picks later, the Dolphins picked Devon Gotchaux, defensive tackle from Louisiana State University, otherwise known as LSU. And again, round five, pick number 178. I'm gonna say the X is silent. I haven't gotten the phonetical spelling.
No,
Dolphins
no,
yet.
You actually did it right the first time, MC Money. Gotchaux. Very good. Like, you're horrible with names. I love you to death, but you suck with names.
Yeah, say quarterback.
Dude, you nailed it. You nailed it.
Wow. So now you guys are gonna tell me how you really feel after doing this for almost a year with you guys and.
We love you, bro. We just got through the bullshit. We'll just get right to it.
Yeah,
well, you should have probably.
Once.
You probably should have done that last August.
No,
we could just stop the
it
show
takes
right
a
now.
It life experience to get over those hurdles, you know.
We can just stop the show right now.
There are 10
we're just,
of 20
we're just bro
listeners
hug it out.
Right now. Do not do that.
All right, Gotchaux was plus 15, and Asiata was a plus 33 on Mike's board here. But, House, what do you think about Gotchaux?
Yeah, I mean, Sutton and I, thanks to him, we collaborated on an article for him. I was thinking about it earlier. Have you guys ever made shoe fly pie where you use molasses? Like, if you tilt that bottle upside down, that's pretty much Gotchaux when he's trying to get off the line. I mean, the guy's slow as shit. He doesn't seem to accelerate fast off the line. I mean, he's a big dude, great against the run, seems to be able to get to the passer, but his first step just seems to be 2 to 3 seconds behind everyone else. I mean, I think between him and Vincent Taylor and Jordan Phillips, I think the Dolphins can definitely find someone suitable there to rotate out next to Ndamukong Suh, but, I mean, it's anyone's guess as to which one of these guys might end up making the 53-man roster. I like him. I think he definitely has potential, but like I said, that first step, I mean, he just seems to – the ball snapped, and it takes a couple seconds. At least on tape, from what we saw, I mean, we watched two to five games. I mean, he just seems to be a little bit slower than everyone else.
All right. Well, you guys are the defensive tackle guru, so Sutton, continue with your analysis of Gotchaux.
Yeah, like you said, we kind of looked at the tape together this time. Something we – it's kind of a new approach that
yep.
we wanted to try to see if we could get a little more perspective on things. We really kind of arrived at the same conclusion that the burst off the snap is just pretty poor. But when he does time the snap well, when
yep.
he does kind of – when those football instincts kind of kick in, he can make some monster splash plays, and I think that's why the Dolphins drafted him, because – there's some splash plays on tape where you're like, damn, like he just completely blows the offensive line out of the water like they're not even there. And then you see seven plays in a row like his feet are stuck in quicksand. So it's definitely an inconsistency thing with Godshaw. So if they can some kind of, you know, if they can bottle up what he's good at and be able to cultivate that in a rotational type of way, because – clearly he's going to be a third, fourth, even fifth defensive tackle with this group. But if he can work his way into the rotation and find some kind of niche in a pass rushing capacity, I think that's going to be a good thing for him. Might be able to help him stick with the team longer.
All right. So I think the Dolphins had similar concerns because just about less than 20 picks later, they drafted another defensive tackle by
yeah.
the name of Vincent Taylor, tackle from Oklahoma State. And my first reaction of Vincent Taylor when they drafted him was like, damn, this dude is freaking huge. Just looking at pictures of him, it's insane how big this guy is. And some were saying that, oh, this is competition for Jordan Phillips. This is a message to Jordan Phillips. And I'm not so sure that is the case when you're drafting guys at the end of the fifth, early sixth round. I don't think you're telling a second-round pick, Matt, is your job that is in danger. But I think
right.
it does set the tone saying, listen, Jordan, you have this season to shape up. You have training camp to get better. You have the regular season to stay more consistent. If you don't, we have depth behind you, and we're going to start the process of getting you the hell out of here. That is the way I'm looking at it. I don't think it's an immediate threat, but I think it's a – subtle message to Jordan Phillips that you need to get going here, buddy, because he's been inconsistent.
Well,
Dolphins coaches called him out as inconsistent in their post-draft press conference, and he needs to just get better.
Right. We kind of had a crisis of bodies there, too, so we needed to kind of draft
yeah.
two defensive tackles. We had what? We had Sue, we had him, and then we had, what, Okoye, and maybe like one other dude in the background. Like, that's just not enough even training camp bodies. So it was a crisis
mm-hmm.
of bodies and talent. And it really, you kind of alluded to it already, it all hinges on Jordan Phillips, in my opinion, and his maturation this year. Because if it doesn't happen this year, it's hard to tell when or if it will happen.
Yeah, and I think that's a lot of what it has to do with, is his maturity. I mean, I think he has all the skills in the world. I think he has all the talent there. I think it's just him bringing it all together, and I don't want to say it, but, I mean, just getting pushed to that next level. I mean, you see the coaching staff, what they're saying about Devontae Parker right now. I mean, that's what you want to see from Jordan Phillips. You want to see him take that next step. You're against Ndamukong. You're alongside Sue. You got Cameron Wake on the outside, Andre Branch, Charles Harris. I mean, I'm pretty sure one of us, or the two of us, tag team together next to Ndamukong Suh, we get a couple sacks, we get a couple tackles. I mean, Jordan Phillips needs to take the next step, and I think these two players coming in there, I think one of them is going to add to the rotation, and I think they're also going to help push Jordan Phillips to become that player that the Dolphins thought he'd be when they drafted him in the second round. I do believe when he was drafted, people thought he was a first-round talent that maybe fell to the second round. But so far, I've not seen that, and I do think that he needs to take that next step, and he needs to be pushed there. And like you both said, if he doesn't make it this year, I don't know what Jordan Phillips has to offer his team.
Yeah, so talking about, you know, Vincent Taylor and getting into what he can offer to the Miami Dolphins, he's going to be a force on special teams. In college, he blocked five kicks, field goal kicks, in his college career. And the main
great point.
Because he has huge hands, right? And when you have huge hands, you know
yeah.
what they say about other stuff, right? You have huge gloves. And
yeah.
I'm not going to go any further than that, okay? So this show just went off the rails. This show.
Well,
just
yeah, Darren Rizzi's going to give him that death
anything.
Stare.
It was the two of you. What are you guys talking about getting hands for?
So, no, he's going to be a force on special teams. You're going to see him line up in the middle. and he's going to start off there. And then we'll see how he develops along. Listen, we're all excited about these draft picks, right? We're all excited about these draft picks, but the simple reality is this. Probably half this class will be a bust, and they won't be on the team in 3 years. As crazy as that sounds right now, I'm going to get real depressing here for a second, okay? And I'm going to go back to when Jeff Ireland was running the show, and I'm going to read off some names for you, okay, from the 2013 NFL draft. And here's where we stand with
Deion Jordan.
Okay. First overall, when the Dolphins traded up, they picked Deion Jordan. He had 26 tackles, if that, in his career, right, with the Miami Dolphins. Jamar Taylor, now with the Cleveland Browns. Dallas Thomas, okay, bad. Will Davis. Okay, Jelani Jenkins, now with the Raiders. Deion Sims with the Chicago Bears. Mike Gillisley with the Buffalo – no, he's with the Patriots now. Caleb Sturgis and Don Jones. So when you look at this class, okay, so I'm going to take back what I said because I was going to make fun of this class. But really, Jamar Taylor is kind of doing okay in Cleveland, right? But Joe Philbin and crew screwed him up. Dallas Thomas is a lost cause. Will Davis, I don't even know where he is anymore. Jelani Jenkins, he was decent. He had injury problems, and now he just needs a fresh start probably. Deion Sims, Adam Gase desperately wanted him back but was not going to pay the money Chicago paid for him. Mike Gillisley was ruined by Joe Philbin and company. Caleb Sturgis was just a stupid pick, kicker in the fifth round. And Don Jones, he was a great special teams player, but he ran into some legal trouble, and they moved on from him there. So, I mean, I guess it's not a crazy class, but again, the point is, half of this class probably won't be on the team in 3 years. And that's crazy to think about right now, right? But it's just a simple truth.
Yeah, it's an inconvenient truth.
So you're talking about this year's class? Because, I mean, comparing this year's class to any Jeff Ireland draft, I mean, that's a little bit – it kind of hurts Tannenbaum and Greer. I mean, Jeff Ireland, he's exceptionally bad, right? He's pretty trash.
I'm not comparing them to Ireland. I'm just saying the simple reality of the NFL is that this happened.
You're right. I'm just – Jeff Ireland, he is garbage.
All right.
I don't even think –
Let me just – yeah. So we'll
that had to be said, though. It had to be said.
We'll see how Taylor shapes out. But I want to get to our seventh-round pick, okay? And I think this was the biggest steal in the entire draft when the Dolphins picked Isaiah Ford. Why was he the biggest steal? Because on my consensus board, I had him ranked, believe it or not, you ready for this? Number 59 overall, okay, based on the average of those draft guides that we pulled together. He was a total overall value of plus 178. Just think about that. And the reason was because he had some injury concerns. He had back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons for Virginia Tech and also played basketball in high school, so he is an athlete. And I don't think this is your typical seventh-round pick where you're automatically thinking practice squad. I think he's going to give the guys at the back end of the roster, like Jakeem Grant, a run for their money, and we'll see how it shapes up, right? I think it's going to be very interesting to see that.
NC Money, what were the injury concerns?
So, you know, when I was doing the research on him, and he's not a big receiver either, right? What is his height here? He is 6'2". So he's about your typical size for a wide receiver, nothing too crazy, nothing too small, but he needs to, get a little stronger. And his draft projection was around 4-5. Now, in terms of injury concerns, there were scouts who thought that he wouldn't be able to hold up in the NFL because he's only 94 pounds, so the physicality there. And basically, the book on him is that he needs to gain weight because he has a very thin frame. So not so much that he was injured often in college. The projection is if he doesn't get bigger when he goes to the NFL, I think he's going to have a very tough time surviving up there. I think that was the main concern with that.
Yeah, I think, and I think kind of what you're getting at is it seemed like separation might be an issue in the NFL.
Right.
With,
absolutely.
You know, he seemed like a great route runner, but also at the same time, doesn't seem like he necessarily gets great separation even in college. So you would assume that that margin's going to be a little bit smaller in the NFL. But at the same time, like you said, he's a seventh-round draft pick that on tape, he does not look like a seventh-round draft pick. I mean, this guy made tough catches and double coverage. I mean, has good body position, good balance. Seems more like a possession receiver, but he can certainly push Leonte Carew. And, I mean, I know we sacrificed a third and fourth rounder for him, but if Isaiah Ford beats him out fair and square, I mean, how are you gonna phase him out? So that's going to be a loaded wide receiver room. Oh, my goodness. I mean, you have Bills, Landry, Parker, Carew. You have Isaiah Ford. You have Jakeem Grant. You have Rashawn Scott. So where, you know, what direction do the Dolphins go in? That's going to be a very interesting training camp storyline.
Yeah. Well, for me, I think, I mean, this our wide receiver group, it's loaded. I think the value, like Kanata said, at the seventh round, that was huge. I mean, you see what he did in college at Virginia Tech in 2015, 75 receptions, 1,164 yards, 11 touchdowns. The next year, 79 receptions, 1,094 yards, 7 touchdowns. I mean, I'm no guru. You guys are going to probably say I'm a wide receiver guru. I'm freaking whatever.
Stop being
there
so
is,
modest.
You try to throw that on me, I don't know shit about anything. But, I mean, for me, watching the tape on Isaiah Ford, I've been saying it a little bit. I've kind of been alluding at it on Twitter. I think he can be Jakeem Grant. I mean, Grant, his speed's there. He's good at returning kicks. He had some trouble last year. But for me, Isaiah Ford, I mean, he's a much better wide receiver. Like Sam said, big fan of Carew here. But, I mean, what Isaiah Ford
much
did in college,
more polished.
Yeah, what Isaiah Ford did in college, he was number one there. And, I mean, I think he can come in here. He can definitely compete with the rest of the group. And, I mean, he's not going to beat out a guy like Landry or Parker
or even
Stills.
No,
but, I mean, to throw him in there, I mean – this guy's 21 years old. To get him in the seventh round, that's a huge get. And for me, I think the big playability is there. I like the route running. I like the way he finds the ball in the air and comes down with those grabs, like Sutton said, in double coverage. I mean, he's a playmaker. And, I mean, I don't see him making a practice. I don't see any reason in the world why he doesn't make the starting roster. So, for me, Isaiah Ford, I'm a big fan of him, and I like what I saw him do in college.
Yeah, we'll have to see how it shakes out. You know, way to go. There's injuries. There's people who regress. There's people who progress. There's people who, you know, who just fall off the face of the earth. And you never know when that opportunity is going to come knocking. All right, we have a caller on hold. We're going to bring them online. Who are you? What is your name? And why are you calling Finsider Radio?
This is Dolphin Fan for Life.
Chris Dolphin, my boy.
What's up,
bro?
Not much. I was actually calling about who you guys were just talking about. Honestly, I see the wide receiver group fitting kind of like this. Stills and Grant, Carew and Landry, and Parker and Ford. I think that if somebody gets a hamstring again, Parker, we wind up seeing Ford being able to fit in rather nicely. And I understand they're talking up Parker something big, but something tells me that that could be for trade. My question is, what exactly do you think possessed us to take a wide receiver in the seventh? Was it just the fact that he was a good steal, or do you think 2-3 years down the road we actually have a plan for
him? I'm going to put you on hold, Christoph, while we answer the question. I'm going to take this one because I think the answer is very clear. He was ranked number 59 on my consensus board, which is an average of 4 draft guys put together. And by the way, our phone lines are blowing up right now. He was a plus 178. That is, if I sort this data right now and I'm in Excel and I'm going to highlight all this data, I'm going to click data, I'm going to click sort, and I'm going to click rank difference, okay? And then I'm going to click largest to smallest. And here's what's going to pop up for me. Isaiah Ford, the biggest steal in the entire draft based on my consensus board. Not even close. 178 plus. Next in line, Caleb Brantley, 135. Okay, and you can't even look at Caleb because the only reason why he dropped is because of his legal issues. Next after that, 116, Bucky Hodges, tight end, who went in the sixth round, number 201 overall. So really, I'm going to look at that, right? 178 minus 116 plus 62 points. Okay, Isaiah Ford
was
the
best. That's like two rounds. That's two full rounds right there.
Yeah, Isaiah Ford was the best player on the board at that time. Listen, Inside the Pylon gave him an 8 out of 10. Ian Wharton gave him a 7.5 out of 10. Optimum Scouting, an 8.5 out of 10. Dane Brugler, an 8 out of 10. This dude dropped so much for whatever reason, and the Dolphins just scooped him up. That is the reason why they drafted a wide receiver in the 7th round. Christoph, thank you for calling. It was great to hear from you once again. We're going to bring the next caller on the line. Who are you? What is your name? And what can we help you with? Hello, welcome to Finsider Radio.
Hi.
Is this Kai?
What's Kai?
Is it me?
I don't know. Who are you?
All right. Sorry, guys. I'm a little bit behind. This is Justin Bell, B-O-E-L-L, Dibbles, whatever. I said
yes,
I'd be
Justin,
calling in for
calling.
You guys' sake. I was just looking at the wide receivers and thinking, I mean, we have our big three with Landry, Stills, and Parker. Do you think Jakeem makes the grant or the team by default just for his special teams ability?
Jakeem makes the grant. All right. I'm going to put you on hold, Justin. Thank you for calling. It is good to hear from you once again. I know you called in a few weeks ago. Am I correct?
Yeah.
All right. So I do have the right, Justin. So good to hear from you.
Yeah.
I'm going to give this one to Sutton because he is our kick returner guru, and he studies kick returners like no one.
Returned kicks his whole life.
So, yeah, he has been returning.
Dude,
that's why he has four kids. This is why he has four
kids. MC Money, and how can I have talked about this? MC Money is the guru of gurus. So he knows which people are gurus at each specific ability. So the fact that you have that knowledge is just
it's
huge
amazing,
for
right?
this program, MC Money.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
I know you guys all want to be like me when you grow up, but you got a little bit to go, and you'll get there, and I will give you tips along the way. All right. Anyway, can you help my boy Justin answer the question?
I love that we can be your protege. I mean, it's just such an honor. But anyway, Jakeem Grant, no, I don't think special teams is his savior. I think Kenyon Drake is a very legitimate stealer of snaps there, and Jakeem Grant is probably the one person on notice right now by this Isaiah Ford move, because Jakeem Grant did not show that he, other than being a decoy last year, was confident with the ball in his hands. So it's been nice to see that he's doing some off-season training with Matt Darr, and he's going to be fielding some punts and hopefully getting over that hurdle there. But what I saw in his rookie year does not save him this year. So I think it's going to be a very real competition, and I don't think that special teams necessarily save him.
Listen, I think Clyde Christensen put it perfectly in his press conference, right? I think he set the expectation and he set the bar for Jakeem Grant, and I think that was a subtle message to him saying, we have high expectations for you. If you don't produce, you will not find yourself on this roster. I think he is very much in play and is a possibility to be a roster cut this season. And that actually plays into Rob Caruso's question on Twitter. Surprise cut this training camp. I think Jakeem Grant is possible despite his draft status from last year. Justin, thank you for calling Finsider Radio. It was great to hear from you once again. Let's bring in our last caller, area code 774. Thank you for calling Finsider Radio. Who are you and how can we help you?
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Steven Mass again. How's it going?
Good. How's it going, Steven?
Good, guys. I just had a thought on Charles Harris and a question after. I think everyone's kind of blown out of proportion, the people that are talking about how they're disappointed in the pick for, you know, because he's not going to be a starter right away. I think at that position, you know, it's, you know, either you got someone who's a run stuffer or you got someone who's a pass rusher. And they're going to play, you know, 50% of the snaps or so, you know. So look at the Giants, like in 07 when they had Justin Tuck and Umanura and all those guys, Strahan. And, you know, look at Seattle recently with Clemens, Michael Bennett, Bruce Irvin, Tony McDaniel rotating guys in. So I think, you know, if he gets a sack every other game and gets like 8 sacks, I mean, he's going to be in the running for defensive rookie of the year probably. So I just think a little too much stock is put in if he's going to start, if he's going to be on that first snap on the field in the first snap of the game. I don't think that's really that big of a deal. And as far as my question, you know, this article coming out about Devontae Parker, you know, ready for a big year and whatnot. I'm just wondering, you know, if by the time he leaves the Dolphins, you know, whether they sign us to another extension in a few years or it's just a rookie deal, if he never has a 1,000-yard season, is he a bust, a first-round bust? And if he is, you know, where does that rank for first-round busts in Dolphins history? That's all I got, man. Have a good night, guys.
All right, we're going to put you on hold. Steven, thank you for calling. And that is a very great question. And before I pass it on, I just want to say this and about Charles Harris and the pick and the need to have a rotating defensive line. Look at the Atlanta Falcons in the Super Bowl, right? Their defensive line, their entire defense was absolutely gassed, okay? They cannot,
yeah.
They couldn't do much against the Patriots in the last two quarters because the Patriots just ran so many plays. The need to have rotations now at pretty much every position except your skill positions is an absolute must. Obviously, you're not going to rotate your offensive linemen, right? But you need to rotate your defensive linemen and get them fresh throughout the game because that is the one position that takes a huge toll on someone's body and running back as well. Okay, so I have no problem with the Charles Harris pick. Like you said, Steven, if he gets 8 sacks in 16 games, he's going to be in the running for the Rookie of the Year. But what I am going to do is pass this Devontae Parker question on to our wide receiver guru, Joshua Houts. I do want to say this, and this is some inside knowledge that I didn't put on Twitter, but the Dolphins, not that they want to trade Devontae Parker, but they did have preliminary discussions and gauged the market for interest in Devontae Parker. We'll see where it goes, but that was the word on the street leading up to the NFL draft. But Houts, take it away. I think he would be a bust. Yes, if he doesn't get 1,000 yards in any season in his rookie contract. But Houts, I know you study wide receivers for a and you'd rather study wide receivers than spend time with your wife. So let us know what your thoughts are on Devontae Parker.
All right. Well, first, that's not true because, as everyone may know, I'm going to have a child, which I'm stoked on. First, let me touch on the Charles Harris thing. I mean,
okay,
for me,
so you spent 2 minutes with your wife before.
It was about a minute.
A break from studying wide receivers and said, give me 2 minutes and we'll make some babies, right?
I was actually watching Jarvis Landry highlight film when it happened. I mean, it just came out right away.
All right. We don't need to know.
An acceptable diversion.
Yeah, he made that one-handed catch and it was over. It was a 30-second.
Back to the original question.
All right, Devontae Parker. He would not – I mean, in my opinion, I don't think he's going to get to that point where he doesn't have a 1,000-yard season. I'm not saying that what these coaches believe in is completely true. I mean, everyone likes to spin this stuff. But for me, Devontae Parker, he has all the skill set to become a number one receiver in the NFL. I think he complements Landry and Stills perfect. And I think this year, I mean, I think this will be his breakout year. If he doesn't get 1,000 yards, I mean, what if he has 7 or 8 touchdowns? Is he still considered a bust? I don't think he would be. I think no one will ever compare to Deion Jordan. He will ultimately become the biggest bust in Dolphins history. I don't think that'll ever change for decades from now. I mean, Deion Jordan is, he's trash. Deion Jordan is garbage, and I don't think any of our players now or in the next coming years will ever be as big of a disappointment as Deion Jordan. I do want to touch on Charles Harris thing. I mean, I think he was a safe pick. I said this last week. I'm a huge Taco Charlton fan. I've said that for months. I do think the Dolphins made the right decision to go with Charles Harris. He's a pass rush specialist. His first step off the line is incredible. His spin move is second to none. And I mean, what he's going to do this year, I mean, he's going to be a role player. He's going to come in. I think Andre Branch, William Hayes is going to be in there for the run. Andre Branch against the pass. And I think Charles Harris is going to be spelled in between there. So, I mean, I don't expect him to have a huge year because he is going to just kind of be worked into things. But, I mean, I think Charles Harris was a safe pick. He was the right decision for the Dolphins, and I'm excited for the team moving forward. Lastly, Devontae Parker. I don't think he's going to be a bust because I think this year will be his breakout season. I know people were saying he's going to be a fantasy breakout. I mean, I had him last year in fantasy, and I still ended up winning a championship. So, I mean, let's hope he does more things this year.
All right. Thank you, Stephen, for calling, and we appreciate your phone call. Have a great rest of the night. All right. Do we have any questions in the Finsider.com live thread?
Yeah, we got something from Alpha. He asked, so all draft picks are signed. How many contribute? How many become stars? And with this particular draft class, I mean, it's hard to prognosticate all this right just this second. But it sure seems like you're going to have five contributors this year. You're going to have Charles Harris doing the pass rushing thing. You're going to have Raekwon McMillan playing. You're going to have Cordarrelle Tankersley probably getting some snaps either at slot or at boundary. You're going to see Asiata competing for guard. And like you said earlier, MC Money with injuries and all that kind of stuff, that you might see him earlier than later. And then I think you're going to see Isaiah Ford get a couple snaps in there because I think he showed some stuff in the red zone. So you guys had talked about Devontae Parker just a little bit. His main point of emphasis for me this year is in the red zone. I've seen him make some plays in between the 20s. I haven't seen him make a terrible amount of plays, high catching the ball in the red zone, making plays for this team on a consistent basis. So that's what I want to see.
All right.
Stars, in terms of the draft class, it's really hard to tell at this point. I could see McMillan being a star, and I could also see Tankersley being a star. And obviously Harris could be a star. So I think there could be three potential guys there. But, I mean, when you look at this draft class, you see kind of a high ceiling with all these guys. So I think it was a nice boomer-bust collaboration there on day three for the Dolphins as well.
Yeah, no, like I said, everything looks great on paper now, right? But when the actual games start, we'll see how it all shakes out. Anything else from the Finsider.com live thread?
No, it looks like it. Yep.
All right, we have one. We actually have two on Twitter. They're both from Rob Cruz, but we'll answer one. He wants to know one surprise cut and one surprise player to make the roster this training camp. I said it just a while ago, and that's Isaiah Ford to make the roster, to 53-man roster, and Jakeem Brant to be the surprise cut. What do you guys think? Sutton, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think Jakeem Grant's on notice. And I think in terms of this particular draft class, you have to like one of the defensive tackles winning that competition in training camp and working their way into the rotation, and the fourth person possibly falling off into the practice squad or just being the fourth defensive tackle, depending on whether we sign a vet or not.
Okay. How about you, Houts?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to agree with you, Kanad. I think there's no doubt in my mind. I'm going to agree with Sutton with one of them defensive tackles ended up making the roster. But for me, I think Jakeem Grant, I mean, I was a huge fan of him last year. I think that speed is second to none. I don't think there's many players in the league with similar speed. I do think he needs to get better at route running and even fielding punts. So, I mean, for me, Isaiah Ford, I mean, the job is his. I don't think there's any reason to believe that Isaiah Ford won't make the 53-man roster. So, for me, Ford's the guy, and Grant, unfortunately, is the cut.
All right, and that's going to do it for us here on Finsider Radio this week. It was good to get back on track this week. I know we had it was just good to get back on track this week. And
love you guys.
Yeah, it was great. And we are going into the kind of the doldrums of the NFL season, I guess you can call it. The little lapse between the draft and the start of training camp. But we're still going to be here every single week providing you with the highest quality of entertainment you can possibly find on the internet for 45 minutes to 1 hour each and every week between myself, certain the creepy soccer dad, and a house. There's Papa House and a house with the white van handing out candy to the little kids on the corner.
I don't have a van. I do not
all
have
right?
a van.
I mean, that's us. And we're going to be here, and we want you to be here too. And we're going to have a lot of fun as we go on. Getting emotional now, so we're just going to cut the show right here. Anything else, boys, before we hang up?
Yeah, I just want to – I mean, you both are being emotional. I just want to say I love you both so much. You guys are great.
And how about you?
Yeah, I just want to say congrats to both of you guys for the upcoming additions to the family. And
yeah.
Let me know if there's any advice you guys need, whether that be minivan-based or not. I'm here for you.
All right. Yep. Mine is due September 3rd. How's when is yours due?
November 5th, Sunday Night Football against the Raiders.
All right. So House got November 5th. I'm not due. My wife is due September 3rd, and we're going to just have a hell of a football season with two newborns right
We are going to MetLife Takeover, right? We're all going to do that.
Absolutely. All right. That's going to be
happening too.
On Insider Radio. Thank you for joining us. Have a great week. We'll catch you next time. Same time, same location. Take care. We're the Miami.